Chapter 6. I thought you were all heading off to electroshock therapy. New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, I thought you were all heading off to electroshock therapy.
I thought you were all heading off to electroshock therapy.
Aunt Barb is eyeing us over more skeptically now, our strange bunch. Yeah, we're still making our way there. It's across the park over on Lex. The girls and Bobo wanted to feed the birds on the way.
Bobo?
Bobby. I meant Bobby. But it's too late. Bobo has taken the mention of his name as a cue and trots over and starts humping her leg while I try to pry him off. Bad Bobby. Aunt Barb is absolutely gobsmacked. God, I love that word. But trying to keep her demure face on.
Isn't it a little inappropriate for a young man like you?
And as she's saying it, she tugs on his hoodie a little. And it slides off, and I try to throw it back over his head, but it's too late. She gets a good look at our young man, the fur, fully grown back, by the way, and the huge eyeballs and the weird three-fingered hands, and yep, you guessed it, she faints. Gigi giggles.
Eh, Barb go boom.
So we sneak Aunt Barb up to the hotel, still passed out, and while she does her wake-up-see-Bobo-pass-out-again routine 3 or 4 times on the fainting couch, it's right next to the farting chair, me and Pete and Tesla discuss our little revelation. Or more accurately, Tesla starts thinking and talking, and we just nod like we know what he's talking about.
Perhaps Aunt Barb has some form of latent power, like Gina Phillips with their telepathy.
We look over, and Gigi and Hannah are poking the poor girl's face, trying to wake her up. Drool is making its way down her cheek. Or perhaps not. We finally get her up and semi-alert. Pete's at her side. Aunt Barb, we need to talk. She thrusts the back of her hand to her forehead and wilts.
Oh, dear. This is like one of those mystery capers I've read, where strange men have drugged me and taken me to their lair in the countryside to demand a ransom, or worse.
Not exactly. It's not sinister at all, but definitely weirder.
Then you're a band of marauders from some far-off exotic land, waiting here for a wealthy sheik to visit this hotel, and you'll force me to seduce him or you'll kill me. And my entire family.
Again, not exactly.
No, I won't tell you anything, you hear? You won't get it out of me? I'll die before I tell you that the combination to the hotel safe is 9-16-12. Oh, dear.
As I mentally jot down 9-16-12, oh, come on, Julie, wouldn't you be at least the tiniest bit curious what they keep in a hotel safe in 1947? Okay, I mentally tore it up. Jeez. Anyway, this is getting nowhere, and she's threatening to pass out again, so I place her hand in mine. Then I open a little silver thread from my mind to hers, and gently, ever so gently, ask if I can tell her the story using telepathy. Surprisingly, and maybe because this is secretly some of the excitement and adventure she's been longing for her whole life, her eyes go from fear to surrender to a little hint of a smile, and she nods. And I tell her the whole absurd thing with my mind, leaving nothing out. Not even the pigeon shit part, which she laughs at. And I don't hold back on the terror part, the part where none of this might exist in a little while if we don't figure out how she fits in. And not only does she stay with me, she's sort of getting into it, like she's Nancy Drew in her own dime store novel. The Entropy Riddle, an Aunt Barb mystery. She gets to her feet, a little wobbly from all the new information. Pete takes her hands and they smile at each other, a little more knowing between them now. Pete digs into his pocket and pulls out his keys. Hanging off the keyring is a heart. I never noticed it before. An ancient-looking gold heart charm with a T engraved in the face. He holds it up to her charm bracelet, matching it perfectly with the heart there. A little newer-looking, but it's the same one, right down to the T. You gave me this, Aunt Barb. Told me to keep it safe.
Did I ever tell you about this charm?
Pete nods and laughs. A million times. You said you bought it off a jeweler who said it was made a long, long time ago. She completes the sentence.
In some far away exotic place. I never told you the ending, though. Mr. Goldman only charged me $2 for it, so I think he made the whole thing up.
She laughs. It's junk. She jangles it around her wrist.
But I love it, and I'm glad you saved it.
And she reaches up and gives him a peck on the cheek. And now, more chipper than ever, she shouts.
Well, fellas, where do we start?
Reaching into her gargantuan purse, she pulls out a Pall Mall and lights up. Gigi and Hannah look at her like she's an alien, and I realize I don't know if they've ever seen a cigarette. I mean, we're from 2020, right? and we don't exactly hang out in places where people smoke. Barb's a little confused.
You know what they say, from breakfast to bedtime, Pall Malls are the smoking treat that treats you right.
They really say that? Pete punches my arm. 1947, dude. How many times do I have to say it? Turns to Barb. Listen, if it's okay with you... And she takes the hint and puts it out, and as the last little wisp of smoke dissipates, Bobo trots over and sniffs it and pops it in his mouth. Holy shit. Wasn't I just saying how I've never seen Bobo eat anything? And now I finally do, and it's a cigarette butt? I'd say that doesn't make any sense, but, you know, Bobo. Anyway, Tesley gently guides Aunt Barb to the ITA door.
Now, Miss Barb, if we could, I would like you to peer into the opening down there. Where the wallpaper's peeling back? You know, a little tape would fix that right up. Or chewing gum. I've got a pack right here in my purse. I read that once in a book, you know. Agent Drake used Wrigley's to stop the bleeding from a bullet in his arm.
Perhaps we can try that later. But now...
So they kneel down in front of the little tear. Wait, is it my imagination, or has that tear gotten a little longer and orangier since we left? And Aunt Barb peeks in.
Miss Barb, can you tell me what you see? Well, it's gonna sound downright crazy. Oh, where are my manners? I didn't mean to say the word crazy. I'm sorry, Pete.
Pete is not insane. We were pretending he was insane earlier to deceive you.
Oh, right.
Now, what do you see?
Yes, what do you see?
Sesame chicken?
Pete snorts again. She ignores him and reaches out to touch the tear. Hesitates, her finger maybe an inch away.
Miss Barb, I don't know if we should be touching that until I've completed my analysis.
But Tesla cuts himself short as a little arc of energy travels from Barb's fingertip to the tear, turning it from orange to a little orange-greenish. She chuckles.
Huh, strange. It tingles. I feel like Flash Gordon.
Tesla gently pulls her hand back.
Interesting. May I try?
And he does the same thing and nothing. I give her the slow clap. Okay, so Aunt Barb has some kind of superpower. Awesome. Do your thing, Barb. Bring us home. But Tesla blocks her hand.
Wait, there is something I want to try. I am formulating a theory. Pete, will you leave the room, please?
Cool. Chip, you watch the little demons. I'll be down at that bar across the street kicking back 25-cent beers.
No, Mr. Pete, stand just outside the door until I call you.
Whatever. And he skulks out of the room, forever unsipped, insanely cheap beers calling to him.
Now, Miss Barb, try that again.
She reaches out, smiling, expecting that cool little Flash Gordon energy arc. But her finger just hangs there like a regular person finger with no superpower at all. No tingles. Bummer.
Well, that certainly isn't the bee's knees.
Bee's knees.
I pick up and throw a paperclip across the room, and Bobo blinks like he forgot he was going to say bee's knees 1,000 times. Thank God. Hey, Barb, forgot to mention, don't talk in rhymes, like, at all, ever.
Excuse me?
Trust me, just trust me. Shit's crazy, don't ask. Gigi and Hannah look over, hearing their forbidden word, and grin and say together,
shit!
No, girls, no, sorry, please don't say that. Bad word.
Shit.
No, really, Daddy will get very angry. They both giggle at this. Man, they've got me completely figured out at 2 years old. Like, I might as well permanently wear a shirt that says Captain Pushover on it. Or maybe a tattoo on my forehead, and I can't help it. I smile back at them, those little mush faces, and suddenly a wave of something comes over me, and I'm back in the delivery room 2 years ago.
This is so beautiful, Chip, isn't it?
Yeah, Julie, beautiful. But my voice is muffled, my hand is over my mouth, because this is the most disgusting thing I have ever seen, and I've seen a ton of gross shit. And once again, I have a new answer to that joke. What's grosser than gross? A human head trying to emerge from another human, like an alien chestburster, with all kinds of fluids spraying everywhere and screaming and crying and stainless steel objects covered in blood. So I'm holding back my own bodily fluids, swallowing hard. Damn, that breakfast burrito is trying like hell to make a reappearance. And I'm sincerely wondering what people find so beautiful about this scene from a slasher horror movie, complete with the mad scientist doctor yelling something at me while my head spins and I almost hurl.
Mr. Collins!
Oh, wait, he's yelling my name. I shake myself to attention. Sorry, what? I was just enjoying the cool, beautiful... It's a girl. And he offers me this little blanket bundle with a face. And the nausea disappears, and for a moment, I have the strange feeling they're giving me something that's not mine. I mean, I didn't come in here with this. I don't have a receipt or anything, and you're going to let me just hold this and take it with us forever? And then her eyes open. I have never seen such big eyes. Looking straight into my soul, those big blues. She yawns. God, she must be exhausted from her 9-month journey. And the little sound she makes is like an angel whispering my name. And we stare at each other for a moment. An eternity in that moment. And I finally understand. The word I had been failing to grasp. I finally understand what it looks like to bring life into the world. The struggle of life to keep on trucking. To move from one generation to the next. To never give up. The word that I just couldn't get this whole morning comes barreling into me now with its full meaning and wrapping me up like this little baby. As I step over to you, Julie, and rest wee little Gigi in your arms, I say the word like I've never meant any word before. Beautiful.
Be happy, Daddy.
Wait, where the hell am I? Oh, it's Gigi patting me on the knee. Tears are streaming down my cheek. No, no, honey, Daddy's not sad. Daddy just remembered the day you were born. They're happy tears. But as the words come out of my mouth, I realize they're only half true, that there is an incredible amount of sadness in these tears, too. As I look at Gigi and Hannah and really feel for the first time a fear for their future. Fear that they'll never even get a chance to remember anything. She hugs me.
Daddy happy now. Gigi fix.
God, is there anything more chip-like than blubbering and being comforted by my own 2-year-old? Thanks, Gigi. You rock. Yeah, Daddy's A-okay now. Back to work. I give her the thumbs up and wipe the wetness from my cheeks and watch Tesla walk to the door and call out to the hall. Master Pete, you may come back. Pete strolls in with a pint of beer in his hand.
Dude!
What, did you really expect me not to? It's a quarter, dude. So you couldn't afford 2? He reveals his other hand from behind his back, holding a second beer. Happy birthday, dude. It's not an ice cream cake with crunchies, but it was only a quarter. He hands them both to me. Okay, Nicola, I'm all yours. Tesla guides him to where he was standing before, and Aunt Barb puts her finger near the tear, and the energy arc thing happens again.
Ooh!
Okay, so it's only Barb, and it's only when Pete's with her. Weird. Tesla pulls Pete down to where Aunt Barb is sitting on the floor.
Yes, just what I thought. Now, Pete, put your hand on Miss Barb's.
He rests his fingers on hers, and immediately the arc flares, and the tear turns bright green. Tesla jumps up, or his version of jumping, he's 91 for Pete's sake, and shouts,
Cheap! Now bring me the tape!
Wait, we're really going to fix the multiverse with scotch tape?
Cheap!
So I rush over with the tape, and he pulls off a length, pressing down the peeled back wallpaper and sticking the tape on top. Not the most seamless job, he wouldn't win any Christmas present wrapping tournaments, but hey, he relaxes, exhales, and smiles. Silence. So, that's it? Tesla wags his eyebrows like, feces is insane, do not inquire. So I don't, and we all just stare at the perfectly boring wallpaper for a minute. Then Aunt Barb slams her hand on the floor.
Well, what do you know? We're a team.
And she pulls Pete's earlobe. Pete reaches up and holds her hand. Wow, you always used to do that. And holy shit, Julie, his eyes start welling up. I walk over to them and look down. Dude, with all the shit stuff we've been through, I've never made you cry. Oh, trust me, you've made me cry. Many times. Just not in a good way. Whatever, so Nicola, let's pop back into the hallway and get us back to 2020 before Julie and Mick...
RIP!
Oh, fuck. Did I just hear what I think I heard? We look over together. I don't even know why, because we already know the answer, and yeah, the rip in space-time is back, twice as long and orangier and angrier than ever. Now, this whatever it is not going down that easy, with a little Aunt Barb tingle and 2 inches of scotch tape. I should have known.
Not to worry, my friends. I had supposed our initial celebration might have been premature. This was expected.
Well, since you say it like that, Nicola, I'm not so freaked out that entropy is collapsing and we're all going to die. Gigi and Hannah look up at me.
Die?
No, I meant, die-de-do. We're all going to die-de-do. It's a, dance. Come on, everybody. And yeah, I get everyone up off the floor in a desperate attempt to distract them from our imminent demise and make up the die-de-do dance on the fly. How to do the di-di-doo dance to distract your children from imminent demise. 1. Stand up, form a circle, and wiggle your hips. 2. Wave your arms in the air like you just don't care. Bobo made that part up. 3. Step to the right. 4. Step to the left. 5. Step on each other's toes. This was an accident, but the kids thought this part was hilarious, so I'm making it official. 6. Kick Chip in the shins really hard. Pete did this because he's pissed at me for saying the word die in front of the kids, so of course Gigi and Hannah start pelting me with their cute little, but iron-toed, Timberlands, and even Aunt Barb and Tesla join in. Boy, everyone's just having a grand old time sending white-hot bolts of pain through my poor shin bones. Whatever, I deserve it. 7. Hold hands and turn clockwise and shout, di-di-doo! 8. Whisper shout to Tesla,
psst, Nicola, please tell me you have a plan. All I've got is this dance.
So anyway, after we tucker the kids out a little, or actually I'm tuckered out and the kids just get bored with the amazing di-di-doo dance, Tesla nods to me and us adults stand around his desk, looking down at him, drawing incomprehensible lines and numbers. He looks around and realizes we're fucking morons, so he starts drawing stick figures instead.
Chip and Pete, do you remember the antimatter amplifier we used with Bill Montrose?
Who? Bill Montrose? No, I know who you're talking about. Who?
I am telling you who.
No, who? The bad guy. The guy with the stupid name. Bill Montrose was his alternate, but a good guy version of who.
Yes, of course. Well, as Mr. Montrose had a subtle ability to emit a trance-like field that we could amplify.
He draws another two stick figures in wavy lines.
I believe with a similar apparatus, we could amplify the effect of Miss Barb and Master Pete's co-proximity.
Pete smiles. Cool, so I have superpowers too, like Chip?
I'm afraid, Pete, that it is not supernatural at all. You are just a normal human being.
Just? Wow. Way to let me down easy, Nicola. Tesla pats his arm and grins.
An exceptional human being, Pete. Perfect, my friend. But perfectly normal. As is Miss Barb. No, it is not yourselves that are exhibiting this power. It is your unique situation that is causing the strange healing behavior of the paradox there.
He doesn't even slow down as our silence is his clue that we are still, and very much so, blank mental slates.
Let me explain.
Nikola Tesla's quick start guide to the mystery of DNA and how to use it to control the flow of entropy. Wow, that was a mouthful.
Step 1. Create a paradox.
Chip note, do not do this on purpose. It's very bad. Tesla is just using this as a starting point. A simple way to create a paradox is to have two people from different points on the same timeline in the same dimension. Say my wonderful daughter Gigi, who never creates chaos, and the equally wonderful Nikola Tesla, who also never creates chaos. I'm being sarcastic, of course. Between the two of them, my life is nothing but chaos. Anyway, have the two of them enter a single point on their home timeline and dimension. The resulting paradox will try to reconcile the contradiction by speeding up time to a point where the whole damn timeline collapses. Listen, if your brain hurts like mine trying to make sense of this, remember the ITA motto. Shit's crazy, don't ask. Okay, I hand the mic back to Tesla.
Step 2. Find direct relatives from the two different dates on the timeline. This is the key, and why my older apparition was trying to point us in the direction of Miss Barb. You see, the only two direct relatives from different dates in this room are she and Pete. The rest of us are either not related or from the same date on the timeline. I believe the timeline, in its efforts to resolve the paradox, see Pete and Barb, because of their very close DNA structure, as essentially the same person. Or close enough. Step 3. Bring the two into proximity. By putting Miss Barb and Master Pete in contact, and both in proximity to the paradox tear, we are signaling to it that it has already resolved the contradiction and collapsed the timeline. The person from the past has become, in a sense, the same person from the future. Or again, close enough. Essentially, we are tricking the paradox into believing it's already done its job. Step 4. Supercoil their DNA chromosomes using radioactivity.
Pete interrupts here. Whoa, you're going to do what to my what using what? It's my turn to snort, finally, but Pete punches me so hard it makes the snort not worth it.
Fear not, Master Pete. I believe we can construct a device that safely twists existing DNA strands using radioactive isotope of, say, polonium. Those twists concentrating and amplifying the signal to the timeline. It will be an external device, Pete. A box with two compartments, one for you and one for Miss Barb. Like two coffins.
Hold on. Like two coffins, dude?
Excuse me, not the best analogy. Like two very small, solitary confinement prison cells.
Oh, that's much better. I can't wait.
Or perhaps a large freezer with enough room for two human bodies.
Stop. I will put in windows. You know what, Nicola? Quit while you're behind. Whatever. What is this thing and how do we get it?
Tesla waves his fingers a little. He can't help it. He does that sometimes when he's about to announce yet another of his incredible inventions. And the name for this one doesn't disappoint.
Ahem. We are about to construct the Multiverse Entropy Restabilizing DNA Energizer.
I think through the acronym for a second. MERD? Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, Nicola.
And we are naming things now so they roll off the tongue?
I was hoping. This has to go in the book eventually, Nicola. MERD. I don't know, it just doesn't do anything for me. Tesla's hand slams down on the desk.
Doesn't do anything for you. This device would save our...
Okay, forget it. Stop. MERD it is. Can I at least buy a fedora on the way out? I have a one pigeon crapping on my head per day limit. I head for the hotel room door. At that exact moment, the sun passes the building next to us, sending a ray of light onto Tesla's face, putting a glint in his eye. He picks up his in-controller.
Not that door, Chip. The interdimensional transfer apparatus. Our destination is not New York.
It's not?
He grins. No, Paris.
Aunt Barb fans her face.
Oh, gay Paris, mon amour, a dream of mine. I knew there was a reason I studied French in high school. Wait, why are we going to Paris?
To see Marie Curie, of course.